It is time for another edition of Ask the Experts right here on CFCO. Good morning. My name is Trevor Thompson. In studio with me, Kim Miles and Greg Foster. And Kim and Greg, you know, I sit back and I listen sometimes, and I say to myself, that's really good information. Maybe it doesn't so much pertain to me as a young man in great health. However, this subject today, I think, affects pretty much everybody.
Absolutely.
Everywhere.
Absolutely.
Everybody everywhere, Chatham, Kent, to Canada, to North America, to the world. It really does. And I just want to say this quote before we start from a dear person that everybody knows about, Aaron Brockovich. Mm-hmm. And this is something that we live by, too. If you follow your heart, if you listen to your gut, if you extend your hand to help another, not for any agenda, but for the sake of humanity, you're going to find the truth.
And that is so important. That's what this show is all about.
That's right.
So just really quickly, folks, we are Choices for Wellness, and we're located here in Chatham, Ontario. And as we always say, we're a health food store and more, and I guess today's show is just the more side of what we like to do.
Yes.
And so you can call us. Our phone number at the Chatham store is 519-351-9111, or long distance calling is 877-351-9111. And you can always check us out on the web, and you can contact us if you have any questions about today's show. You can contact us through our website at choicesforwellness.ca. And Greg, did you have a couple of things?
Well, actually, the public lecture, we're going to have a public lecture about this whole talk today. So you get, I think, the real side. That's how I'm going to say it, the real side of everything.
Yep.
It's going to be March 10th at Smitty's at the Arista Room. The doors will open at 6:30. The talk will start at 7. We're going to have a bunch of people that have compiled a lot of information, and we're just going to share you the information. We're kind of the messengers. Mm-hmm. We just want you to know the truth. And we want you to see everything, see all sides.
So I guess we'll just sort of give everybody we haven't even told them what the topic is. So today, folks, we're talking about the onslaught of the industrial wind turbines. And here in Chatham, Kent, we actually have a map that shows over 100 turbines that are heading our way here in Chatham, Kent. But actually, the numbers are more staggering. They're projecting 450 or more.
Yeah.
Most of the communities that we've talked to around the world basically have said, you know what, if they're saying 450, you can expect double that. So we don't know the actual numbers, but our first initiation into this whole thing was when Greg and I went to the council meeting about, 2 weeks ago now, 3 weeks ago?
Yeah.
And It was shocking, actually, and it turned our head around because, like Greg and I, we always say, are for green energy.
We are all for green energy, and really, I always tell people, we have friends that sell solar and sell small wind turbines for the house, and I believe at a small scale for you individually, that a wind turbine would be fine for your family, possibly. I don't know the health effects of this one, but the small turbines, I think, would be beneficial. These huge industrial factories.
They're wind factories,
wind turbines. We have a ton of proof. We've actually went down to Burwell last weekend, and we talked to some people down there. Kim just got off the phone this morning with somebody from Kincardine area.
Yeah.
Unbelievable health stuff that has went on, and that's what we're all about. So we have Dr. Nina Pierpont on our show today.
And, just to let you know, too, so we went to the council meeting, and we found out there was a whole other side, because, again, we were thinking it was green, so we found all this information. So literally, folks, since then, Greg and I have been either on the phone, on the web, checking all over. This information is all around the world, so this isn't stuff that we just sort of made up or are making up today. We've checked into all of this, so we do want you to know that we aren't just pulling things out of the air. We have talked to a lot of credible sources, and as always, there's two sides to everything.
Mm-hmm.
This topic, I think, has multiple sides. But anyway, so let's get on with our guest. Our guest today, we actually found through a lot of research.
Mm-hmm.
But her name came up in a lot of different areas, so we got a hold of her. Our guest today is Dr. Nina Pierpont. Now, I've only got a part of her bio, and hopefully I can, you know, do it some justice, because Nina is just an amazing person in her research. But she's a graduate of Yale University. She has her PhD in biology from Princeton University, her MD degree from Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine. Her residency in pediatrics was at the National Children's Medical Center in Washington, D.C., and at the Dartmouth Medical School in New Hampshire. Dr. Pierpont is a board-certified pediatrician. She is a fellow of the American Academy of Pediatrics, and she has, for the last 3 years or more, been the assistant clinical professor of pediatrics at the College of Physicians and Surgeons at Columbia University in New York City. She currently has a solo practice in behavioral medicine, where she sees both children and adults in Malone, New York. Anyone who wants to contact Dr. Nina, I guess, could go through us. I didn't write down the web address, so we can probably give that throughout the show. But her husband said, please no phone calls, because as our phone call came in, I'm quite sure to Nina it was probably on the list of like 1,001 for that day.
Exactly.
So we definitely can get a hold of her for anybody that needs any information. And make sure that you do come listen throughout the whole show, but we do have petitions in our store. Get informed, and that's why we have Nina here. So welcome to our show, Dr. Nina.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. And that, and like I said, I think your actual bio on your website is probably about 2 pages, so I couldn't read all of that
exactly
today. So hopefully I didn't goof up on any of the big words, Trevor.
Okay.
So
let's get right into it, right?
Yep.
I have on a Know the Truth, Wind Turbine Syndrome. It is real. Negative impacts on human health can be both psychological and physiological. Am I correct on that, Dr. Nina?
That is right. And I named wind turbine syndrome about 2 years ago.
Okay.
Because it was clear from the accounts I was reading and hearing from people that there was a consistent set of problems, of symptoms that people were having who lived near industrial wind turbines in various parts of the world. And near, in terms of where people have symptoms,
mm-hmm,
extends at least to over a mile away.
Okay.
So what I've done I'm doing original basic research, meaning that I have a series of cases of people who've actually had these problems. And the way I'm studying it is by in-depth clinical interviews, like a really thorough history that a doctor would take of people who've mostly... there are a number of families around the world who I've talked to who are the most severely affected I've found.
Mm-hmm.
And a number of these families have moved out of their homes because of the problems they experienced near the industrial wind turbines.
Now, how close did they live, Nina?
Of the ones who've moved out?
Yeah.
There are 3 families who've moved out who are a kilometer away.
Okay.
So this is 0.6 miles.
Right.
Okay.
And these people who move out, it's not a convenient thing.
Mm-hmm.
They're everyday, regular people who don't have a lot of money, who work hard, and they rarely can sell their house.
Mm-hmm.
Of the 12 families that I'm using at present as cases, 7 of those have moved out. Only 2 of them have sold their homes. And in both cases, they've either been bought out directly by the turbine owners or it's been a sale arranged by the turbine owners.
That's convenient.
Yeah.
But because people don't want to move into houses next to industrial wind turbines,
yeah,
the families have had their houses assessed, appraised, and the appraisers in different countries say similar things. They say, well, maybe it's worth 50%, 40% of what it was, but no one's going to buy it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Because with the disturbance there, the presence of turbines, people just look elsewhere for those homes.
And, you know, and I guess this is the gentleman I just got off the phone with before we came to the show lives up in Goderich, and his name is Ernie Marshall. And he said that we are more than welcome to use his name, but he lives on a farm, and it's so true. Like everything that you're saying, Dr. Nina, no one can discount that because people are living through this. But what he said, it's very hard for people because once you start to complain, you know, you want to sell your house or your farm. And so if you start to complain, who's going to want to buy it? And he was telling me that of all of the farms that live around him, most of them are either up for sale, have sold, and there's one that's actually sold twice because the people that moved in couldn't live by the wind turbine, so they actually moved out as well. But later on in the show, I'll mention the health effects that this poor man has suffered
and
with his family.
And some of the people that he's talked to,
yeah,
yes.
And the people up there. So continue on, Nina. So some of the research, once these turbines start running, how long before, is there a general amount of time that people start to notice things?
It depends on what the symptoms are, so mm-hmm. I'll talk about that as I go through them.
Okay.
And also how quickly they resolve when they're away varies according to the symptoms as well. So there are some that resolve immediately, others that take more time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, let's tell our listeners about some of the symptoms.
Yeah,
let's go
what
right
are
into
some?
It.
Yeah.
Well, a primary one is difficulty sleeping. So that's when someone has few symptoms, that's usually the one they have. And the people who are more severely affected usually have the more severe sleep problem.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And sleep is a huge thing because, let's just suppose you already had a health challenge and then all of a sudden you're not sleeping at night. Or we know in our industry, the minute people stop sleeping at night, that's...
The stress levels go way up, right?
That's huge, right?
Yeah.
That is.
Now,
it's a very big one. But
yeah.
There are issues, too, with the type of sleep problems that they have.
Okay.
Some people get to sleep easily. Some lie awake for hours. Most people get awakened in the middle of the night by noise.
Mm-hmm.
When they get awakened, there is often a feeling of being startled or afraid or even panicked. People have to get up and check their houses, even though they know what the noise is. People all identify these problems as coming from noise.
Mm-hmm.
I am not studying what part of the spectrum of noise or vibration or low-frequency noise that this is.
Mm-hmm.
I'm leaving that up to people who study noise,
mm-hmm.
who are called acousticians. I'm working with two good acousticians in the United States who recognize that this is a problem which in their long careers, both of them, they have never seen an industrial noise problem of this degree,
mm-hmm.
and they recognize that these symptoms are very consistent from person to person,
mm-hmm.
that when people complain, they're complaining about the same thing, and that's why I called it a syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So the sleep issues, too, especially combined with the fear issues, particularly affect younger children and people who are 50 and above, though people in the middle are certainly not exempt.
Mm-hmm.
Of the young children in the study, the ones age 6 and below, the ones who are toddlers have had night terrors. There are two of them of those represented in the sample, which now in the 12 families includes between 40 and 50 people.
Mm-hmm.
So night terrors are when children awake screaming. They don't completely awake. They're disoriented. It's very hard to settle them down. And one family in particular, the father said that he never slept because his child never slept. And
mm-hmm.
the child was waking up 5 or 6 times a night screaming and took half an hour to get him back to sleep each time. These problems resolve immediately. So the first night somebody sleeps away from the turbines, it's fine.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Okay. The second set of problems is headache. Headaches are very common among the people I talk to, and they vary in degree. For some people have daily headaches. Some people have pounding, very painful headaches. Altogether, the frequency of headaches that people has goes up. For some people, the headaches are debilitating. They keep them from being able to accomplish anything.
Mm-hmm.
So headache is a big problem.
And I must concur on that one. Actually, we went up to Port Burwell last weekend to check out the turbines because we want to get some pictures and some visuals. And we actually had some fish at one of the local places and talked to a waitress. And she said since the turbines have been in there, she's had migraine headaches pretty much every day, and so does her 13-year-old.
And her son.
Yeah, her 13-year-old, same thing. So
yeah.
Again,
that was just one person.
That's just one person that we talked to. So I know it's out there.
So yeah. Other than the headaches, then what happens?
Just a little more about the headaches. People who have migraine are more susceptible to getting effects around the turbines. So one of the things I'm doing with this study is interviewing people in detail about their own medical histories,
mm-hmm.
so that I can define who is more susceptible and who is not, because not everybody is affected. And
mm-hmm.
within families, you'll have some people who are not particularly affected and others who are severely affected. Some families may have nobody who's affected.
Mm-hmm.
So I am, one of my goals is to define what the risk factors are in somebody's previous history.
Mm-hmm.
And a tendency towards migraines is definitely one of them. People can also can be triggered for headaches or migraines by noise or by, some are particularly triggered by the moving shadows in their homes or moving shadows on their properties, which in homes, inside a room, the moving shadows become shadow flicker.
Mm-hmm.
So that as the shadow of the turbine blades pass over the house, the light flashes inside the room.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not possible to keep the flashing out unless you actually use blackout curtains.
Mm-hmm.
So just the flashing light triggers some people's headaches. And it can cause a feeling of pressure, like a sinus headache, or of pounding like a migraine. People with migraines, though, are not the only people susceptible to the headaches. The third issue, which is often tied in with the headaches, is dizziness. Dizziness, lightheaded, nausea, feeling of disorientation. Overall, a feeling that's related to the equilibrium system in the middle ear and elsewhere in the body. Sorry, in the inner ear and elsewhere in the body, which are being disturbed. This is a particularly interesting area because some people identify particular places in their houses where they get these symptoms. It's like a place where the sound waves or the vibrations are particularly focused, so that on one couch or in one place in their living room or near a particular window, they will start to feel sick and lightheaded, and if they don't move away, it'll go progress to nausea or progress to a headache and worse feelings. This, in discussing this with the audiologist, we discussed about whether the vibration, some of these people also have a distinct feeling of vibration when this is going on,
mm-hmm.
but they'll tell me, I touch the furniture and it's not vibrating, but I feel like I'm vibrating.
Mm-hmm.
While other people will say, I'll touch the picture window and it is vibrating, and I get these feelings right up close to that. So sometimes the actual substrate or substance of the house is vibrating, and sometimes it's not. And I discussed with the audiologist about how this was coming into the house. Was it coming in through groundborne vibration or through airborne noise or sound air pressure waves, which is what noise is, both audible noise and noise essentially that's outside the hearing range.
Mm-hmm.
And they said it's coming in through the air. It's coming in through the air, making the house vibrate, because certain frequencies of sound have the right, they'll make a structure reverberate.
Mm-hmm.
Like the frequency of the pressure waves will correspond to something about the size of that structure so that it can vibrate in tune with it.
Mm-hmm.
So a house can vibrate.
Okay.
A house can vibrate, and then certain rooms can have a resonant frequency inside the room where a certain frequency of pressure vibration will bounce back and forth between the walls and be accentuated in that room.
Okay.
And then within that, you could even have focal points or nodes where the sound waves are focusing, where the sensation will be stronger.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's good research on how, in response to low-frequency noise, a person can feel a sense of vibration in their chest or their abdomen or their head. And in the chest and abdomen, it corresponds to actual vibration measured on the surface of their skin, whereas in the head, it also reflects something going on at a deeper level. And sometimes people get a sensation of movement or a feeling even inside their head from being exposed to low-frequency noise. Of the type that can set up vibrations on the skin. So what this is all heading at is that there are probably airborne pressure waves in the audible or low frequency range, which are setting up vibrations in houses which people can feel and which perturb their balance system by causing vibratory feelings either in the main part of their body, in their torso, in their where their organs are,
mm-hmm.
or in their inner ear.
Well, I think science definitely knows there's so much more about vibration that we're discovering, right? I mean, even, I don't know if it's even adequate to do this comparison, but bursting gallstones with laser, what do they call
it?
Ultrasound.
Ultrasound.
Ultrasound, right? So, I mean, there's so many things that we didn't know before that we now know about what sound and ultrasound and things like that do.
Yeah. So people with motion sickness are quite susceptible to symptoms around turbines.
Mm-hmm.
So part of my interview is asking them if they've ever been carsick, if they've been seasick, how they tolerate carnival rides. And people who have this kind of problem usually know who they are.
Mm-hmm.
So that when you start talking about moving shadows or sensations of movement even while you're still, they go, ah, yes, I'm one of those people.
Mm.
That would bother me. And some of those people have migraine and some don't. Sometimes they go together and sometimes they don't.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Nina, I think, I'm sorry to cut you off. We've got, we have to go to that very first break, and I know we didn't even want to have to stop and take a break. But, folks, we're talking today about industrial wind turbines, and not to be confused with wind farms, because that sounds nice and rosy and everything, but these things are massive wind factories that are heading our way. And if you're out there listening, it's not just Chatham Kent, and it's not just a local problem. This is a global problem in every community. So if you don't have them yet, they're on the horizon, and they're heading your way, and we all need to be educated about this whole topic. We need to make sure that we know what we're doing, and we need to make sure that we're very, very vocal to our community politicians, to our any politicians, anybody in authority. We have to get the word out there. There's a lot to know. So a quick website that Greg and I would like to refer everybody to is www.wind-watch.org. That's just one of many, but on that site, I think, Greg, they can find oodles of others.
Yes, they can. Yep.
Yep. So we're going to take our very first break, and when we come back, we're on the phone with Dr. Nina Pierpont, and Nina has actually been researching what she now coins wind turbine syndrome for probably 3.5 to 4 years now, and we've got some more great information about this whole thing and how you can get involved and how you need to get involved and be educated. So we're Choices for Wellness, and we'll be right back.
We now return to Ask the Experts on 630 CFCO.
We are back right here on CFCO. Good morning. It's 10:33. My name is Trevor Thompson. That's enough babbling for me. Right back to it. Here's Kim Miles and Greg Foster.
Yes, we are. We are Choices for Wellness. We're two health food stores and more. And today is about the more part. We really want to get the word out about wind turbine, industrial wind power, because that's the bad one, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
We've been doing countless hours of studying ourselves since we heard about them. We were all for green energy, so we're not one of these people that are, you know, anti this and anti that. We really, really believe in green power, but this is really not it. I mean,
this is definitely not what it appears to be.
It really isn't. Go to windwatch.org. So it's wind-watch.org. Check that site out to start with, and you can do some of your own research out there.
Yeah, you can you can click on the side there. There's all different countries listed, and you can click on your country or province or whatever.
Yep.
You can get local sites. There's a lot of great local sites. There's a group close to us in Essex that are sort of doing the same thing we're doing. There's the group here in our area called CK WAG. So there's groups all over the world trying to stop this.
And believe it or not, some of the mainstays that have been around for 20 to 30 years, they're not even building them on their land anymore because they know that they're getting so many health effects.
Yeah.
I'm just going to say this one right here. The French National Academy of Medicine has called for a halt to all large-scale wind development within 1.5 kilometers of any residence because the sounds emitted by the blades constitute a permanent risk for people exposed to them. So again, and the UK Noise Association studied the issue and agreed with the recommendation of a 1 mile setback.
And
so,
our setbacks here.
I mean, the setbacks actually at the Port Alma site in our neck of the woods is going to be 0.6.
Well, we clocked it to a couple of the places that are out there.
To a couple of places, 0.6. And actually, when we went to Port Burwell, I actually took a picture of their little kiosk they had there. And the setback from the town of Vienna was 450 meters. Setback from an off-site dwelling was 300 meters. So, I mean, unbelievable.
We're going to talk about how dangerous that is today.
That is dangerous.
But I just wanted to get our website out, because definitely if people have any, if you are anywhere, any community anywhere, and you want information, get a hold of us. We're at www.choicesforwellness.ca, and you can contact us through there, and hopefully we can get you some of the websites and the information that we've gotten, because it's just been a personal thing that Greg and I have just sort of started to look into this, because we don't have any turbines going in our backyard.
And we're the ones that aren't making any money.
We're not
this,
making
right?
any money.
The other side of the fence, they're the ones that are making the
and
profit.
And that's the question we want to ask.
And really,
right?
The other thing I want to throw out there, too, before we get back to all this, I mean, if they're going to put 450 turbines in Chatham, Kent, which will take up about 40% of our land.
40%.
There's only going to be, at tops, 450 farmers that will make the money. So out of all the people that live here, 450 people might make a little bit of money, mm-hmm. but what is the adverse effects of everything?
On our environment,
right.
It's just endless. So that's why people need to be educated. We could not fit everything into this show that we have found out in the last couple of weeks.
And that's why we're going to have a public lecture March 10th at Smitty's. The doors will be open at 6:30. At 7 o'clock, we'll start just giving you the message that we're trying to get across today
just
and
information.
More. Information, and we just want people to know more.
Yep, you can take it for what it is. I do just want to add in here, the gentleman that I spoke with up in Godrich, though, I do want to tell people, he, within about a six-month period of the turbine starting in his area, within 6 months, he suffered a stroke. He went blind in one eye. The one neighbor to the south of him had a heart attack, and the other neighbor to the north of him had a similar stroke to what he had, with no sort of health issues before that. That was mm-hmm. within 6 months of them starting up in their area. And he also had... And actually, I got very emotional. I wasn't sure I was going to be able to do this show, because after talking to him, I was pretty upset about it. He had horses, and he had to get rid of all of his horses because they started going crazy, literally started crazy. His one mare would stand out in the paddock and just sweat, was stressed right out. His two dogs he had to have put down because they wouldn't even go outside anymore. And the one younger dog, he said, would go out and just sit out in the yard and bark and bark and bark. And this was an actual story, folks. These people have been driven out of their homes. Again, they had to sell their farm. He said luckily they were able to sell their farm.
Mm-hmm.
But they're actually moving to an area where, because he says he can't sleep at night, his wife can't sleep at night, he can
but
feel his hair standing up on his arms all the time. Like he can, he says he just actually feels like his skin's vibrating. So what we're talking about today with Dr. Nina Pierpont, this isn't stuff that she's made up. These are actual people, and he gave me a list of other people up that area that are experiencing of the same thing.
We will contact them.
So once you start looking at this, folks, there's a lot to be learned, and I'm hoping our council is listening today, and I'm really hoping that all of the citizens of every area, of every, you know, anybody who's listening, I'm hoping that someone will stop this madness, because it's just insane what we're finding out. So let's get on with Dr. Pierpont. So,
Yes, Dr. Pierpont, we were just talking
just
about...
add to all that, too, that there's no scientific basis for the low setbacks.
Okay.
Exactly.
For the 300-meter and 450-feeter meter, that's just picked out of a hat.
Yeah,
right.
Picked out of a wallet, we might say.
Well, I think they see the area that they want to move into, and they decide how many they want to put in that area, and then they pick the setback to make it fit.
And isn't it convenient that the people leave?
I agree with these mile or more setbacks.
Yes.
Okay.
And I believe the British Noise Association said a mile and a quarter, and some other people, including myself, have said a mile and a half.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Extrapolating from some surveys done in earlier years about how people, what they thought about the turbine.
Yeah.
Okay.
So what are some of the other symptoms? We did mention when we were chatting off the break about kids with autism.
Yes, I want to talk about the effects on thinking, memory, and concentration in general.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
These, often what brings problems to a family's attention or really makes it stark for them that something is going on. It's not just themselves feeling bad. It's when their teachers start notifying them, that asking them what's going on with their child, why all of a sudden the child is doing poorly in school, not focusing, or having behavior problems. So the children are having difficulty with concentration and memory, doing their homework. Adults are also noticing the same problem. One person in my study is a woman in her early 50s who is a master's level nurse practitioner and trained in health administration, and she found that in her house she could not follow the plot of a TV show or follow a recipe or figure out how to put a piece of furniture together from that came stored in a box.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
She couldn't follow the directions, and she was perfectly able to do all these things and a lot more before the turbines were there.
Mm-hmm.
She lives about a kilometer away from turbines, or did before their family rented another house. Her husband is a farmer, and they still farm the land and need to use the house as an office, but they rented another place where they could sleep out of their savings.
Wow.
Another man, a young man in his 30s, said that his memory was never the best. He particularly had trouble with faces and names, but he spontaneously put numbers on it for me. When I talked to him, the family had moved out of their home about 6 weeks earlier after an exposure period of about 5 months, again about a kilometer away from the turbine. And he said that his memory went to about 2%. It started out about 85%. It went down to about 2%. And after he'd been out of the house for 6 weeks, it was back to about 10%. He was up to being able to remember maybe three things when he went to town, whereas when they were in their house, if they went to town, either he or his wife, who was also young, same age, if they went to town, they had to have a list, or they'd have to turn around and come back because they couldn't remember what they'd gone for.
Wow.
So people tell me these things spontaneously, and these are people in different parts of the world who have not been talking to each other. Often when I talk to people, after I interview them is when they end up getting in touch, if they want, with some other people who've suffered the same problem,
mm-hmm.
but not before. So I have wonderful quotes of in people's spontaneous language of the things which they observed.
Mm-hmm.
So the pace of recovery from the memory problems is not rapid, or it's not instantaneous the way it is for the recovery from sleep problems.
Okay.
And I really wondered in this, there's a couple of different other phenomena in medicine that I think maybe give us some clue as to what's going on here. There's a big body of study on the effect of low-frequency noise on organs in the body, not through the balance problem, but more just what happens to the tissue itself when it's vibrated a lot. Pathological studies showing that there's thickening of connective tissue support and in the brain of cells which support the nerve cells, and when there's overgrowth of some of these other substances, it can actually get in the way of functioning of those organs. I've looked too at the recovery time from something like a concussion. If a person has a concussion, their memory and their concentration, their ability to think and just deal with daily tasks is really very impaired immediately after, and it recovers over some weeks. You need extra sleep during that time, but there's actually been some very subtle damage to neurons. Now, if a person has, say, a football player has repeated concussions during his life, they can end up with dementia and severe depression and mental illness from repeated concussions.
Mm-hmm.
And looking at information on taken from different sports, it looks like about three concussions is about the maximum that your brain can tolerate in a lifetime. And a concussion isn't really considered to be a major brain injury. It's considered to be just sort of a bad head bump with a temporary loss of consciousness or a little memory problem afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
But just those subtle kinds of of shaking and impact to the brain have effects on its structure and function. So I think that the issue with concentration and memory may have to do more with those, with that shaking and vibratory phenomenon. And when people go away from the turbines, the children are recovering fairly quickly. The adults that I've talked to out about 2 months after moving are not completely recovered, and I'm still following a number of those families to see when they get to the point where they feel like they're back at baseline. I just want to talk about learning in the sense of hearing also.
Mm-hmm.
Children's language acquisition. One of the little children in the study was speaking perfectly before the turbines went into place, and he developed some sound confusion while they were there, which was persisting afterwards. So his vocabulary and his thinking ability are fine, but now he's mixing up sounds that he didn't before. The issue of autistic children is very important because autism, the kids don't develop language in part because they confuse sounds which are coming in. So they tend to be very hypersensitive to noise.
Mm-hmm.
They don't like fire alarms. They don't like being around groups of people who are talking. And other kinds of sensory issues can bother them too. But recovered autistic people who have grown up and are very intelligent people and have learned language and gotten beyond that talk about the confusion of noise that presents itself to their ears when they're young. So they have a developmental difficulty with sorting out sounds. So instead of being a baby and seeing the noises resolving themselves into language very quickly, they hear noise. And so adding anything that confuses hearing to the environment of those children, I feel will be very detrimental. So far, I have one autistic boy in the study, and I don't have a good sense of his learning issues. He's homeschooled, but he does have severe tantrums around the turbine while the rest of the family is having sleep problems and headaches. Just in terms of the hearing things, a lot of people feel pressure in their ears, get popping in their ears like they're around an airplane, and get tinnitus or ringing in the ears.
Mm-hmm.
And often the tinnitus kind of blends into a headache so that there's this big kind of buzzing headache. Some adults have also talked about having a new difficulty understanding conversation in noisy places after they've been exposed to the turbine. And this is also a problem which has not gone away. It's something that they've noticed sometime in the time while the turbines were there or soon after, that they can no longer sort out conversation in a noisy place. And that's really a central auditory issue. It has to do with how the brain puts together the signals from the two ears.
Mm-hmm.
Because you need good input and good integration of the input from both ears in order to sort out things from background noise. So something is happening in that area as well. When you get something like tinnitus, other people have also described that while they're around the turbines, their ears are too sensitive to noise. So that, say, the TV noise, it's not just loud, it hurts their ears. Like, they're just oversensitive. So that's called hyperacusis. So that and the tinnitus both indicate that there are things being disturbed about the nerve impulses from the ears into the brain.
Nina,
Nina,
we've got a little bit of a sound problem here. I think everything's okay now because we're hearing a little bit of feedback.
A little bit of vibration.
So we're good. Okay, keep going. We just wanted to check and make sure
vibration.
We're okay.
That's right.
Okay.
So with the sound, yep.
That's good.
Another set of symptoms is that people feel the vibrations or pulsations or thumping from the turbines in their bodies, particularly in their chest. And several people have described to me waking up and feeling that their heart is beating along the rhythm of the turbines.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure if the heart actually synchronizes or just they're feeling this thumping feeling in their chest, which is very disturbing. And if they get up and walk around, the feeling goes away.
Okay.
But then if they lie down again, and it usually happens at night, it comes back.
Yeah, now that's interesting, Nina, because that's exactly the guy in Godrich has never spoken with you, and that's exactly what he said to me this morning. He said, but he said he would also wake up in terror. Like he would, like you said with the kids, he would wake up and he would say to his wife, "Did you hear that?" And he said it sounded like a truck went through their house. And he said, and then this pressure on his chest. And he said he just felt that thumping. And then, you know, he eventually had that stroke. So I just wanted to say that because it's not something that you're just finding.
Yeah.
It's happening everywhere.
I also think that one of the risk factors for this kind of feeling is previous noise exposure. So that people who've had a life of a lot of industrial noise exposure,
mm-hmm.
or they've been in the service, they've been in the Navy and in the boiler rooms of ships, or they've been in heavy industry, or they've been in an industry where they're making jet engines or turbines, that they have, that it's a cumulative effect. And that's what this the group in Europe, actually in Portugal, that studies the effects of low-frequency noise on organs themselves, the one that talked the vibration and how it builds up extra connective tissue.
Yes, yeah.
Okay.
That group has really focused on how it's a cumulative effect. And actually, in Europe, pilots and other airline personnel are tracked for how much time, how much evidence they have of these health effects of the long-term exposure to low-frequency noise, and there actually have been some airline stewardesses that have ended up on disability, and that's recognized by governments over there that this is actually a real problem.
Now, mm-hmm. is that VAD?
Is that what they call
that's VAD? Yeah. That's fibroacoustic disease.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. We've looked at a little bit about that, and it seemed like it's been around for 20 or 30 years, has it not?
That's right.
Yeah. So it's not a new thing. Yeah.
In coordination with these chest symptoms that people have, and often they give strange descriptions, and usually, when I probe, like, what are you feeling? They always laugh a little bit. Said, well, like, this is really weird. And then they'll describe sensations of something being in their chest,
mm-hmm.
or of being in a microwave, like there's energy inside them and they're being cooked alive, or of insects crawling around in their chest. There are just a lot of really unusual symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But in the process of all that, there's also a lot of exacerbation of asthma going on, and some severe or extra severe chest colds or lower respiratory infections, worse bronchitis, pneumonia. So that's a pattern also. And again, that stuff makes sense with the fibroacoustic disease research, which has shown pathologic changes in the lung tissues, like the lining of all the airways that go to our lungs. They have these little tiny hair-like things in them called cilia, which are just parts of single cells,
mm-hmm.
which move all the mucus along,
mm-hmm.
so that the mucus keeps moving out and that gets all the particles in it. Just keeps cleaning your lungs all the time. It's like a little micro sweeper system that lines every airway.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the cilia are sheared off by the vibrations. So then there's no little micro sweeper system, and people are ending up with more asthma, which often has mucus stuck down in the airways,
mm-hmm.
and more respiratory infections with prolonged coughs because they're not clearing the mucus, the germs, the grit, and everything as well as they should be because their chest is vibrating, and at the cellular level, the airways can't take it.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the VAD research is really good on this kind of stuff. The head of it is a pathologist. And they've done good animal studies and good biopsy studies, and their work on these chest symptoms is really good. Another place where the VAT literature is very strong is that the way it was first noticed and described is by a rate of new onset of seizures in adults, which was over 10 times the average for the Portuguese population in general,
mm-hmm.
Portugal being in the country where this was being done. So problems with new onset seizures. Now, this is with much higher intensity noise than we're talking about here with the turbines.
Mm-hmm.
But I think in seeing things like the concentration and memory effects, which do not resolve immediately when people get away from the turbines, that there's something going on from the vibration at the pathologic and tissue levels of certain organs, especially in the chest and in the head, both places where there's a potential for reverberation, because the head has the skull, and then inside is the brain is soft, rather fatty tissue,
mm-hmm.
much lower density. So there's a potential for pressure or sound waves to reverberate, to bounce back and forth in there. The chest is full of air with muscle and bone around it.
Okay.
So turbines do produce low-frequency noise and infrasound.
Mm-hmm.
It's when noise is measured without weighting networks, as they're called in acoustics,
mm-hmm.
which screen out some of the low-frequency noise. The low-frequency noise is there, and it's even there in the descriptions by people who are trying to minimize what the symptoms are that people experience.
Mm-hmm.
But what they say is, if you can't hear it, it can't hurt you.
That's not true.
And that's derived from the basic work on hearing thresholds done 75 years ago with pure tones that every acoustics person is trained in as dogma.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is, it isn't true.
Mm-hmm.
And people who study equilibrium and balance are much more aware of the other ways in which the body picks up noise and vibration other than by hearing it. But the other issue is here is that when these problems are going on for people, they all hear things.
Mm-hmm.
They all know it's the noise, but it's noise plus something.
Mm-hmm.
Many families have told me they would much rather, they're perfectly fine living next to a really busy road or a subway line or an elevated subway line, a train that goes by their window. That doesn't bother them.
Mm-hmm.
What bothers them is these turbines, and they'll say it doesn't sound loud, but it just gets, can't get away from it. It gets inside you. They all describe qualities of the noise which are unbearable,
mm-hmm.
and then these other symptoms, okay. You know, which are part of the reason why it's unbearable.
Can you just, because we're running out of time, can you just give a point form list of some of the other symptoms? Because I know there's even digestive problems.
I've pretty much talked about it, except that there are eye symptoms, too.
Okay.
There are other people who've experienced pain and blurring and tearing and redness. One young man who was having, a healthy young man, having temporary episodes of blindness, which are related to constriction of blood vessels in the eye,
mm-hmm.
which did resolve after he'd moved away. And some of these things, because I have a small sample size,
mm-hmm.
that there are suggestive clusters, but what I'm doing is providing a framework by describing the syndrome and the range of things and the pathophysiology based on other research of
mm-hmm.
what's going on, so that this can become a basis for doing epidemiologic studies.
Okay.
Yes, which is what we need to push for.
Right. So in your medical professional opinion, setbacks, could you just briefly talk about the setback?
What should we be pushing for?
I think it should be at least a mile and a half.
Okay.
If not 2 miles, I've been reading, but
So a mile and a half.
I mean, right now I have families who've moved out because of severe symptoms, both including young children, young adults, and older adults.
Okay.
At a kilometer away. So starting out from that, I want to double it.
Yeah.
I want to double it, because these people are severely affected. And I talk to lots of other people who are not as severely affected,
mm-hmm.
but they're miserable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And
Nina, I am so sorry. We're out of time.
Yep.
We're going to have to... one last final thing?
Yep.
If you could say one last final thing to our listeners.
I would work your local and regional governments as strongly as you can about this, because it's money on the other side and no science.
Now,
setback.
Yeah, no science. And you were going to mention Brandon, New York. They just banned them there, right?
Yes.
Yes.
So there are
New York and Bangor now have a cluster of three towns where they're banned.
That's awesome, and that's what we're going to hopefully, you know, we can do. So we have to say goodbye, Nina. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy practice.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, thanks so much. We'll talk soon. Yes.